Well, we welcome everybody to the Second Court of Appeals. We have only one case on our 130 docket to hear argument in. But first I wanted to mention and welcome, we have several students who are visiting our courtroom today. So they will get to watch your arguments and your presentations today. They are basically high school students. They're from the Challenge B class from Classical Conversations. And so they're going to listen to arguments, and then they're going to have a brief tour around the chambers and the courtroom and the clerk's office afterwards. So we're glad you all are here today. And, of course, we're glad to have our counsel here. If the clerk will please announce counsel, he'll be arguing. Mr. Rossini.
May it please the court. I'm here today representing Sheffield Development Company, Inc., or Sheffield, on an appeal of summary judgment. And first and foremost, Sheffield would like to impress upon the court that this is an appeal of a summary judgment and the summary judgment standards apply. We believe that that's particularly important in this case because Appellee C&B, who is the defendant below, seems to have argued before the trial court and in briefing before this court that summary judgment was appropriate because Sheffield did not prove its case against C&B. And we would impress upon the court that the standard, of course, is whether or not more than a scintilla of evidence is in the record regarding a material issue of fact on each element of each cause of action identified by C&B. We believe that looking at the record as a whole, there clearly is more than a scintilla of evidence in support of each one of Sheffield's claims. Given the number of claims and legal issues raised in this appeal and the limited amount of time I have today, I'd like to focus on two causes of action in particular, Sheffield's breach of contract and Sheffield's contribution claims against C&B. And by way of background, it's important to note that Sheffield Development Company is a developer in the region and has been developing properties in Tarrant County and in the surrounding area for more than 30 years. And in fact, for approximately 30 years as well, Sheffield has relied upon C&B and its predecessor entities to provide engineering services for development of certain projects, including the project at issue, which is the Heritage Edition West Fork here in Tarrant County. And in this particular case, Sheffield, not having any engineer on staff, relied upon the experience and the expertise, the qualifications of C&B to provide services in three principal areas. First, to develop a grading and drainage plan for the subdivision. Subdivision included numerous lots, over 300 lots. And I know that approximately 103 lots are at issue here with respect to lots purchased by one particular home builder. The second broad area of services that C&B contracted to perform was to oversee contractors, and in particular the grading contractor. That's not expertise that Sheffield has. It relied upon C&B to oversee the grading contractor to make sure that the drainage plans, the grading plans were followed. And finally, the third broad area of services was that Sheffield relied upon C&B to certify that each lot that was going to be sold to a home builder actually conformed with the grading and drainage plans. The evidence shows that C&B failed to perform under the contract. And in particular, and Sheffield's breach of contract claim focuses on one particular provision that Sheffield contracted with C&B to have an engineer certify lot grades at rear lot property corners. Now, the reason why we're here before the court today has to do with alleged foundation problems at the subdivision that developed after the subdivision. The development portion of the subdivision occurred in 2001 and toward the very beginning of 2002. Morrison Homes was one of the three home builders that purchased lots from Sheffield in the development. They constructed homes and they eventually in April of 2007, brought suit against Morrison Homes claiming breach of contract and negligence regarding the geotechnical properties of the soil at the development. claiming that Sheffield knew of the properties of the soil and that it was subject to more movement than is standard for residential development and withheld that information improperly.
And is there a certification of this grading, or I guess it's the grading at the rear of the lot?
That was the key contract issue at the key contract provision at issue is that an engineer would certify the rear lot property corners. There is no evidence in the record that that certification took place. And in fact, one key point that Sheffield would like to point out is that in discovery in this litigation, it asked CNB, you know, what's your information showing that an engineer performed these rear lot certifications? And CNB's response was that it did not contend that one of its engineers certified the lot grades at rear lot property corners. There was only one fact witness of CNB that Sheffield was allowed to depose before the trial court ended discovery with respect to CNB. And that one fact witness on behalf of CNB said that as far as he knew, he didn't know of any records of any rear lot certifications. And this was not a minor or insignificant contractual provision. This was material to the overall contractual relationship of the parties. As the court probably appreciates, if the front of each lot is at the proper elevation, but the rear of each lot is not, then clearly grading and drainage problems could result. And in fact, in this case, one of Sheffield's expert, Mr. Adams, testified in his expert opinion that not only did CNB fail to certify the rear lot property corners, but they weren't certifiable because they were shown to be outside or at a variance with the grading and drainage plan. And not only that, but Mr. Adams further opines that because the grading and drainage was off due to CNB's wrongdoing, there was moisture accumulation, and CNB and Sheffield also presents additional evidence in the record from a Mr. Blake, who is an expert not retained by either party here or indeed by any party in the underlying controversy. And Blake submits engineering reports from four different properties that further links up moisture in the surface and subsurface of the soil with soil movement and links that up causally with foundation movement leading to foundation problems and the precise damage to the homes that Morrison Homes complained of in the underlying lawsuit against Sheffield. And we believe that that adequately establishes the causation aspect of Sheffield's contribution claim, jumping ahead, but also with respect to Sheffield's contract claim against CNB. CNB alleges under a traditional MSJ theory that it conclusively established Sheffield had no damages. And in order, in an attempt to satisfy that, CNB points to the deposition testimony of Mr. Gary Sheffield, Sheffield's president, cataloging what he thought were the damages at the time. Well, months later, and after Sheffield has amended its petition and added additional damages, Mr. Sheffield presents an affidavit that lists additional damages. And of course, CNB's argument is, well, that's just a sham affidavit, and therefore it does not constitute any summary judgment evidence. But as this court is doubtless aware, the sham affidavit doctrine does not hold in Texas or in this court. And this court has, and the Texas Supreme Court has expressly held that if a deposition and an affidavit testimony from the same testifier is at variance, that in and of itself would create a fact issue that would preclude summary judgment. Correct. Yes. Your Honor alludes to the fact that there was, and Sheffield does appeal the evidentiary decisions of the trial court, but for purposes of argument today, I'm focusing on evidence that was not stricken and is part of the record. Therefore, we have damages that Mr. Gary Sheffield testifies to in the amount of $4,500. And what is the source of that damage as well? Quite simply, CNB contracted to certify the rear lot property corners. There's no dispute that Sheffield paid in full on the contract, and and there's a fact issue as to whether or not CNB delivered the services contracted. And CNB's response is, well, wait a minute, Gary Sheffield's affidavit is conclusory with respect to this $4,500 figure. But the affidavit is not conclusory because it shows its work in that there was a line item in the contract for $9,000 for street grading and lot certifications. Well, we don't dispute that the front of each lot, the grading of the front of each lot was certified. We have evidence that none of the rear lot corners was certified. Therefore, that's half of the $9,000, which is the $4,500 in a contract damages.
And the record's clear in that affidavit, I guess, that the amount was paid, and Mr. Sheffield had personal knowledge of that, correct?
Yes. Not only is the affidavit clear, but our briefing is clear, and CNB has not raised any fact issue with respect to that. There's all of the evidence indicates that amount had been paid.
So the question, if there is a fact question, is how much grading was actually done, and or was it done properly?
Correct. Our contention is that the record evidence clearly shows that the rear lot certifications either were not done at all or were not done properly, because had they been done properly, the errors would have been caught and we would have been alerted. But exactly how that happened at this point in discovery, the trial court cut off discovery from CNB, and no expert discovery from any party has taken place yet. In fact, trial is set for November at this point, with additional discovery with the remaining parties ongoing throughout the summer. So there are fact questions, and we believe that the trial court erred in taking those fact questions away from the jury with respect to the amount of damages that Sheffield sustained, given the fact that there's really no dispute that there is a fact question, but there are some damages. Another area of damages that Sheffield sustained on its breach of contract claim is the cost of its defense of claims asserted by Morrison Homes in the underlying litigation. And this is an equitable theory of recovery that we urge the court to recognize, given the fact that CNB's wrongdoing led to Morrison Homes damage, and in that the improper grading of the lots caused moisture accumulation, which is exactly lockstep with what Morrison Homes alleges, that moisture accumulation on the properties caused expansion of the soils, causing foundation problems. Not only that, but CNB is, Morrison Homes amended its petition in March of 2009. You know, part of the tenor of what CNB's briefing is before this court is, why are we even here? Why did Sheffield even sue us? They're just throwing a broad blanket over everyone they can find to haul them into court to try to get more settlement money. Well, nothing can be further from the truth as established by the record. The record is that Morrison Homes sued Sheffield in 2007, and then Morrison Homes amended its complaint in March of 2009, alleging a new theory of negligence, that the property was improperly and negligently developed. Admittedly vague, but they also specifically brought a negligence claim on the theory of a negligent hiring and negligent entrustment on the part of Sheffield, saying that Sheffield negligently hired and negligently entrusted third-party contractors. Well, who would that be? Well, among other parties, that would be CNB, whom Sheffield hired and entrusted with the engineering services with respect to the grading and drainage plan and certifications of the property. Therefore, you know, that happened, that amendment to Morrison Homes pleading happened in March of 2009. Also in the spring, in May of 2009, Sheffield filed for leave to bring in those third parties, and that's when CNB was brought into this lawsuit. So this is not a wide blanket that Sheffield is trying to cast, but rather targeted based on Morrison Homes' theories of why they claim that they are damaged in this case. One legal theory that CNB, moving on to Sheffield's contribution claim, one legal theory that CNB presents in an attempt to gain a traditional summary judgment on the contribution claim is that the economic loss rule prevents contribution claim in this case. However, the economic loss rule is, you know, and the argument is important. The argument that CMB makes is that these homes were damaged, that's an economic loss, and therefore the economic loss rule prevents recovery. Well, as recently as last year in the Sherryland opinion, the Texas Supreme Court, you know, expressly rejected such a blanket, you know, knee-jerk application of the economic loss rule. The economic loss rule doesn't prevent recovery of economic loss on a tort claim. You have to look to the what property has been damaged and whether or not that is the subject of a contract at issue. And with respect to the contribution claim, you know, standing in the shoes of Morrison Homes, there is no contractual privity between Morrison Homes and CNB whatsoever. And even if the court were to take a step back and look at the contractual relationship between Sheffield and Morrison Homes, or Sheffield and CNB, all those two contracts dealt with the development of the land, not the construction of the homes. Therefore, under any theory, the damage to the homes, that property is not the subject of any contract at issue, and therefore the economic loss rule does not apply. I see my time is up, therefore there are no further questions. I'll reserve for rebuttal.
All right, thank you, Mr. Rossini. All right, Mr. Keach.
May it please the court. Counsel. Your Honors, if I may, I would like to revisit briefly a basic understanding of the case. This case came about when Morrison Homes was required to, in a widespread basis, repurchase homes from, I believe, 36 lots that it had sold to homebuyers in this development. And their theory of liability, when they tried to find out what happened, why were these homes having foundation problems, and why did we have to buy them back? They sent some engineers out to do geotechnical testing, and they discovered that what's a colloquial term in the industry of hot soil, that the soil in this area had a great capacity to shrink and swell. And this is a big deal for home builders, because depending on the nature of the soil, it will determine what sort of foundations they build on their homes. But based on that investigation, they looked at what Morrison Homes, what Sheffield Development Company had represented to them when they first purchased these lots for home buildings. And the geotechnical investigations were dramatically different. And then they learned that there had been another report, a second report, which had much higher PBR values that was not even disclosed to them. So the lawsuit by Morrison Homes against Sheffield is essentially related to this geotechnical issues, and it explains on a widespread basis of why so many homes throughout this subdivision were experiencing foundation problems. Now, when Sheffield was sued, if it was going to look for a place to spread the blame, it had to look for people that it worked with. Its geotechnical engineer was already part of the suit, so it brought suit against basically everyone else. Now, Your Honor, that is true. Now, let me explain that, because that deserves a little context. The negligent hiring allegation was alleged against Sheffield for its hiring of the geotechnical engineer who misrepresented the nature of the soil. Not CMB. There's no mention of grading or civil engineering design whatsoever in Morrison Homes' pleadings. And Morrison Homes never asserted a claim against Carter and Burgess, which they well could have if they thought grading or civil engineering had anything to do with this case. They did not. What they said was it wasn't developed appropriately, because if you know that you have hot soil, you can spend a good amount of money that Gary Sheffield and Sheffield Development would have had to spend, to prepare the lots so that you treat the soil and prevent it from then exhibiting this shrink and swell. So that allegation of, well, they amended their pleading in this new allegation after 2 years where we were surprised and we had to go out and do it, it all relates back to Morrison's theories, and their only theory is that this was hot soil and that the information about the hot soil was withheld from them. Now, Morrison's theory, which we don't have to prove or disprove, explains the problems throughout this subdivision. Sheffield Development's theory is much less widespread. For Sheffield Development's theory to have to hold water, so to speak, it has to be able to show that in January of 2002, when Carter and Burgess had finished its review of the grading that had been done, that there was in some particular spot a grading defect where the grading, and what that means is the level of the dirt, whether it's higher or lower, whether there was some defect in the grading that would then cause water to flow towards a house. And it would have to show that that condition existed in January 2002. It would have to show that that condition remained unchanged, even though home builders were coming out with bulldozers and cement mixers and brick trucks and regrading and moving the land. They would have to show that that condition remained unchanged, even though home buyers were also doing work. Landscapers were coming out. Swimming pools were being installed. But they would have to show that that condition remained unchanged and that on that particular lot, water went to the house in greater quantities than would be expected. Water ponded around the house and then caused foundation movement. Every link of that causal chain would be required if this was a lawsuit about one house. In this case, it's a lawsuit about 36 homes. And in order to maintain a cause of action as to any one of these 36 lots, they would have to show those causal links for each home that they wanted to be part of their case. Now, there's a question about discovery in this case. This case had been on file 3 years by the time Carter and Burgess filed for summary judgment. Sheffield Development Company had 3 years to investigate and conduct discovery. It had consultants that it had already hired. It had taken multiple depositions, gone through numerous document discovery. So there's really, discussing whether there was adequate time for discovery is really not an issue. Now, don't be concerned about the large amount of documents in this case. When it comes down to it, it really boils down primarily to the affidavit and report of Robert Adams, and possibly the affidavit of Gary Sheffield. But depending on what's done with the Adams affidavit, you don't even have to look at the Sheffield affidavit. Now, the Adams affidavit was insufficient to create a fact issue in this case. Now, we heard a good amount of discussion about rear lot corner certification. We heard a discussion here about how it wasn't done. Well, that's simply not true. The rear lot corners were certified. To address a question about, you asked about certification and what that means. In the contract, if you look at in the record on page 3702, there are different types of certifications that Carter and Burgess was asked to perform. One of them, which was what the case was first about when the lawsuit first came in, was whether the pads where the homes were actually built, called the pad sites, had been properly certified. And the contract called for those to be certified in writing. And they were. There was a written certification that resulted in relation to the pads. And we're talking about 259 lots throughout this subdivision. But there was no written certification requirement for the rear lot corners, and there was never intended to be. That was a task that would be performed and was performed. Now,
but how would you perform it? I mean, how do you provide the person who's hired you with a certification of the rear lot? I mean, do you just pick up the phone and call them?
Well,
how does it get done?
The process, Your Honor, would be that the surveyor in this case, and there's a question about whether an engineer would do this. This would be work done by a surveyor. The capitalized term in the contract on page 3702 of the record refers to Carter and Burgess, the engineer, the engineering firm. A surveyor would go out and survey the rear lot corners. In fact, we have records. The crews were out there doing their work. If there was a corner that wasn't properly certified, they would bring it to someone's attention. And if there was a rear lot property corner that was not properly graded, then they would bring that to someone's attention. Otherwise, there would be nothing to do because the work had been done. And in fact, the grading contractor who was deposed in this case testified about their laser equipment and everything that they went out and did. The affirmative evidence was that that work was done. So, in this case, we move for summary judgment on no evidence grounds. And if Sheffield Development wanted to prove that it was a breach of contract, that Carter and Burgess did not certify rear lot property corners, then they would have to bring forth evidence that Carter and Burgess did not certify rear lot property corners. And they have not asserted any such evidence other than the conclusory statements in the affidavit of Robert Adams, which I want to turn to because it's so important.
But how do you certify, again, how do you prove there was no certification if there's no written requirement of a certification? It's proving a negative.
Well, what you would do is you would find some evidence that the rear lot corners in January of 2002, when Carter and Burgess left the job site, that the rear lot corners were out of conformance with the grading plan. And there may be different ways to do that. You could find witnesses. You could ask the grading contractor, which they asked. You can look for photographs. It's difficult to prove because so much time had passed by. But this was never a written requirement, and it was there's been no discussion of it being a written requirement, and the contract certainly did not call for that. And that would be the interpretation of the contract made by the trial court judge, Judge Curry, who carefully looked at this case for 3 years before he ruled on this motion. Mr. Adams, in the background, was telling Sheffield Development Company's lawyers, I have told you again and again, or repeatedly, or as I've said before, nothing that Carter and Burgess did caused any of the problems in this subdivision or any of the things that Morrison Homes is alleging. Yes, yes, that email was produced and it was admitted into evidence and it was before Judge Curry below. Now, if Mr. Adams wanted to provide something that was at least a scintilla of evidence, he would have to have something that was not conclusory and that there was a foundation for what he said. But if you look in his report, the pinnacle of his opinions, and this is on page 3660 of the record, he talks about some deviations. And there's no question that the ground out there today, in 2010, at the time this report was written, did not match the exact grading plan as it existed in 2001. But here's what he said. It is not apparent at this time as to why the deviations from the approved grading plans and specifications occurred, or as to who was responsible for said deviations. Then he goes on and lists the possible culprits. And he lists Carter Burgess as a possible culprit. But he also lists Morrison Homes, landscape contractor, pool contractor, and individual homeowners. Pardon me. So, Your Honors, all four of those entities would have done their work on the property after Carter Burgess had finished, after Carter Burgess had done its certifications. What he said is, there's problems, but I can't tell you who caused them or why. Now, he does make a note in his affidavit, but again, that affidavit is part of this report. They're combined. And he makes a conclusory statement about Carter and Burgess not completing its obligations. But if you look at the cases we cited, and in particular, I'd like to direct your attention to Jelinek versus Casas, which is a Texas Supreme Court from 2010 case at 328 Southwest 3rd, 526. It says, it's not enough for an expert to simply opine that the defendant's negligence caused the plaintiff's injury. The testimony must come with a reasonable degree of probability and explain why the negligence caused the injury. If no basis for the opinion is offered or the basis offered provides no support, the opinion is merely a conclusory statement and cannot be considered probative evidence, regardless of whether there is no objection. A claim will not stand or fall on the mere ipsa dixit of a credentialed witness. Now, when there are multiple possible inferences, the expert has to explain which one is right and which one's not. That one was not, Your Honor, but the second case we cited is Ford Motor Company versus Ridgway, and it was a summary judgment case. And in that case, there was an F-150 that caught on fire. And the affidavit of the plaintiff's expert in that case was very similar to the affidavit in this case. In that affidavit, the plaintiff's expert said that he suspected that a problem in the electrical system caused the fire. But he could not rule out a problem with the gas system, and it was the electrical system that was the part of the claim. And the Supreme Court said, because this expert could not rule out part of the fuel system as a possible cause, it was not sufficient to raise a fact issue. The bottom line is, a jury, you can't say to a jury, well, this problem could have been caused by negligence of an engineer, or really it could have been caused by negligence of a landscape contractor. That's a jury doesn't have the expertise to decide between those things. You have to give that jury causation testimony. And it is not, Your Honor, when the expert says it could have also been these other things, and the jury cannot choose between possible expert opinions. If the expert can't decide for himself, he doesn't know. He can't say that it was Carter Burgess instead of someone else. Then it's not a fact issue for a jury. If the expert had come up with an opinion that said this is what caused it, then the jury can assess that opinion, but it can't come up with its own. I see that my time has expired, Your Honors. There are a lot of details here, and we've covered most of these things in the brief. If you don't have any other questions, I sure appreciate it.
All right, thank you, Mr. Keith. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, rebuttal, Mr. Rossini.
Thank you, may it please the Court. Where to begin? I'd like to start, though, with where my colleague for CMB started with this another PBR report that he talked about that had proved hot soil. Well, the fact of the matter is there was another report that CTL, who was a co-defendant of Sheffield, produced in this case. And they created the report back in 2000 and what I believe approximately 2001, and they produced the report in discovery. There's no evidence that Sheffield ever actually received that report except for in discovery in this litigation. Moreover, that report itself doesn't actually have any PBR values in it. So it would be disingenuous to claim that there is another report that shows different PBR values than those reported to Morrison Homes.
And what was the name of the company that prepared that report?
CTL.
Well,
they actually were. I was representing Sheffield in another appeal before this court regarding CTL last year. So, also, again, I go back to my initial comment for the court. This is a summary judgment case, and summary judgment burdens apply. It's not our burden to prove that Morrison Homes' theory of hot soil is incorrect. The fact of the matter is, we have evidence of grading and drainage problems and that caused moisture retention, moisture expansion, contraction, leading to foundation problems. It's evident and there's no dispute that Morrison Homes sued Sheffield based on foundation problems. And we have evidence that those foundation problems were caused by bad grading and bad drainage. My colleague says, well, wait a minute, Mr. Adams, Sheffield's expert, doesn't rule out myriad other possible causes. Well, again, that's not the standard before us today. And why is that? This case involves multiple wrongdoers that have independently caused the same problem. Keep in mind what CNB's role was on this project. CNB's role was not just to develop a beautiful plan regarding drainage and grading and leave it on the shelf. They were required to go out and inspect and certify that all of the property corners of every lot conformed with the grading and drainage plan. And when were they supposed to do this? Well, obviously, after the excavator excavating contractor, Rodman, did all of its work, and after the retaining wall contractors did all of their work. Well, you know, my colleague says, well, wait a minute, the excavating contractor was sued in this case and claims that they didn't do anything wrong. Well, that's not the standard either as to whether or not a co-defendant has, you know, produced exculpatory deposition testimony. The facts are that Mr. Adams relied not in a conclusory fashion, but he relied on his own inspection, homeowner complaints from 2004 through 2007, foundation and other expert reports from 2005 through 2007, surveying results that we were able to do in 2010. And the fact of the matter is these were homes purchased by third parties, and we didn't even have access to the properties until the later part of 2008, going to the somewhat incredulous contention that these claims were in existence for 3 years. The fact of the matter is we sued C&B once we realized that we had a basis to sue them based on our obtaining discovery. Morrison Homes, notwithstanding their pleadings, did produce in this case evidence indicating that there were grading and drainage problems, civil engineering problems. And that's when we brought in C&B. And because there are multiple tortfeasors involved, C&B being one of them, there's no obligation or no burden on Sheffield to produce an expert, you know, claiming that not only was C&B the only cause, but the only cause.
All right, thank you. We appreciate your arguments today. We also appreciate your extensive briefing in this matter. Your case is now submitted, and you all are excused. And we welcome and again thank you, our guests, for being with us today.